tonight being sponsored by the Friedman family, L'Zecher Nishmas Jack Friedman. Jack Friedman was an extraordinary person whom I had the chus to know, being that he lived in Kew Gardens for many, many, many years. Jack Friedman was a tall, dignified person with tremendous stature, a very humble person who never called himself a Rav, even though that he had smicha from Rav Huttner and Chaim Berlin. I got to know him when the Beis Yaakov in Queens realized that they could not anymore finance their high school. And so a high school had to be started. A group of us got together, and the one who led all of us, who was the first president of Shemach High School, was Jack Friedman. In Queens, we are forever grateful to him because this is a wonderful girls' high school. And if not for him taking the mantle of leadership and responsibility, it would not have existed. When the Kohen Mishirov needed a nursing home, he stayed in Jack Friedman's nursing home in Washington Heights. Jack Friedman was the type of person that this story only came to the fore after he was nifter. He was the type of person who once went to a bar mitzvah in a town in Long Island, was a young, growing Jewish community. At the bar mitzvah, he went over to the Rav and the Rebbetzin of the Shul and he asked them if there was a mikvah in town. They told him that they didn't have one. He paid for it on the condition that no one would ever know about it. Jack Friedman's wife herself told me that she had no idea that he gave the money for that mikvah. It was only after when they were sitting shiva that this story was told. Besides everything else, he got involved with the Eitzah HaTorah network of schools in France. He traveled there many times. He supported them. He was a very special person. It's a great kavod for all of us that tonight we're being sponsored by the Friedman family. L'Zecher Nishmas Jack Friedman, Yaakov Friedman, Yehi Zichrei Baruch. Tonight, we have come together for a wonderful organization that I personally had the schus to see in Eretz Yisrael. This organization is called Chickens for Shabbos. Later in the program, Rabbi Neumann will come forward and he will tell you about this. And when I speak later this evening, it's Hashem, I'll tell you exactly what is going on in Eretz Yisrael, how they literally, without exaggeration, feed more than 10,000 Yidden every single month. It is my duty now, and my honor, to be able to introduce the first speaker of the evening, and that is Rabbi Zachariah Wallerstein. Rabbi Zachariah is known here in Brooklyn for many, many reasons. Primarily, he has been a Rebbe in the Crown Heights Yeshiva for more than 30 years. A master machanach who has lately began speaking about chinuch in many, many different cities throughout the United States. But the thing that impresses me about Rabbi Zachariah and his wonderful cousins is that the Wallerstein family is now known throughout Brooklyn and throughout the United States as people that are welcoming in those people who need a second chance. There is a yeshiva called Ur Yitzchak. His cousins run it, Rabbi Pinchas and Rabbi Shmuel Wallerstein. Rabbi Zachariah gives a shiur there every Tuesday night. But Rabbi Zachariah's specialty is the wonderful organization called Or Nava. This is a Torah center, a women's Torah center, for women 17 and up. Without exaggeration, 900 women come a week to the many different shiurim that are being given literally every single night. To Rabbi Zachariah's Wednesday night shiur, 400 people come. Tonight, the topic of our discussions will be bringing out the best in your child. How to be machanach children in today's difficult times. The speaker will be Rabbi Zachariah. We welcome people across the country in St. Louis, as we said, Montreal and Muncie, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, and in Kew Gardens, my hometown. I just personally want to thank Golan. He's the one who sets it up, a big bal chesed in our neighborhood. And now, I would like to ask Rabbi Zachariah to come up.
Thank you, Rabbi, very much. Thank you. Shkoyach. Good evening. Thank you. A good davach. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Thank you, Rabbi Krohn, for those beautiful words. I'd just like to speak for a minute about chickens for Shabbos. It's an interesting story that I was told many years ago. Regarding someone in Eretz Yisrael who, Erev Yom Kippur, the week before Yom Kippur, would go around collecting money for chickens, for kaparas, for poor people to eat. And there was a man in Yerushalayim who every single year used to buy 100 chickens. He gave them, I guess it was at that time, probably about $6. So he gave them about $600 for these chickens to be used for kaparas to give to poor people. And every year the man would come and knock on his door right after Rosh Hashanah and he would give it to him. And then one year, his parnasa wasn't what it was, and he didn't really have any money to give him. And when the man came to the door, he said, you know, this year I'm really sorry, you're going to have to go to somebody else. I don't have the money to give you. And the man turned around, was about to walk away, and his Eish HaChayil was screaming from the kitchen, no, come talk to me for a minute. So her husband came into the kitchen, he said, what's going on? She said, listen, there's something we do every single year. Maybe we're going to get judged in Shemayim that when we had enough money we did it, but we weren't willing to really go, you know, when we don't have enough money to really go and do this mitzvah, maybe we should give more this year than we usually give. He looked at his wife, he said, what are you talking about? She says, I don't know, I just have a feeling. Maybe we should give more this year. He says, but you understand, that means we're going to, you know, for Yontif, we're going to have to buy a little less clothing, whatever. She says, just do it. Just give him 150. Give him 150 chickens. So this was actually told to me by Yerushalmi, this story. So, okay, he went out, he made out a check, whatever, he gave him the shkolim, and he bought 150 chickens. Fine. That, and the night of Yom Kippur, he had a dream. This is how he says it over. And he had a dream. I guess it was in his subconscious that he didn't want to give the chickens. Now he wanted to give the chickens. His wife wanted him to give the chickens. So he had a dream. And this is what he said. He said that he saw in the dream that he was online to walk into a courtroom. And he comes walking into this courtroom. And he realized that this was his din. This was the time of his din. He realized that he was in a courtroom. And on one side, there was the satan, the prosecutor. And the other side was the defender. And the prosecutor came out in front of the Bezen Shalmaila, and the way he says it, he had a paper from Shemayim to Aretz on what this man did wrong a whole year. He says, and the satan is about to open his mouth to say what he did wrong a whole year, and all of a sudden the door opens, and 50 chickens come flying into Bezden. And then 100 chickens, and then 150 chickens. Anyone who's been in a room with 150 chickens know that they make a lot of noise. And this is what he sees in his dream. And the chickens are cackling and doodling, and they're making so much noise, and the Yetzer Hara is standing there, and he's trying to start, you know, prosecuting. And they're making more noise, and he's prosecuting, they're making more noise. Meanwhile, the line's waiting, because he's got to get to the next neshama. And anyway, what he saw is that the Yetzer Hara got up in front of Ben and said, listen, you got to get these chickens out of here, because I have a lot to say about this person. And Ben said, these chickens, we can't move these chickens. These chickens were kaparas. We can't touch them. So anyway, to make a long story short, because I have a time restraint, the bottom line is that the Yetzer Hara made a deal. He said, listen, I got a lot of other neshamas to prosecute. I won't prosecute this neshama, but get the chickens out of the courtroom. He says, and then he woke up, Yom Kippur morning. And he turned around to his wife, and he said to his wife, I think that this year I would have been done for something really not good. And I want to thank you for saving my life. Because I went the extra step, and he told her the story, she thought it was very funny, but there's a very deep meaning to this story. And I really think this has a lot to do with chickens for Shabbos. We don't know, when we donate money, when we give money to buy chickens for a poor person in Eretz Yisrael, that schus of that chicken that you gave to put on someone's Shabbos table, or I know they give it out even during the week, what that will do in the Bezen Shalmaila comes Rosh Hashanah. So whoever can help this organization, it's a very, very big mitzvah. And who knows, maybe you'll have a dream tonight. Okay, the subject matter tonight is bringing out the best in our children. I want to say before I speak on this subject that of course we could speak for nights and days and months, that I am not a specialist in this. I'm a Rebbe for 30 years, I'm a parent, but there is no such thing as a specialist in this. And there is no, they call cure of professionals. I don't know what that word means exactly. Because once it becomes professional, then it's not Dvarim HaYetzim and Alev. To Makarev, another neshama in Klal Yisrael, all of us in this room and all of us in Klal Yisrael have the koyach and have the power to be Makarev, another Jew, just by a handshake, a good word, a smile. You don't have to be a professional. I am also not criticizing tonight the ways of anyone, the way they're bringing up their children. I am just going to try, from my experience of 30 years as a Rebbe, to give you some tidbits, some ideas, in order to develop a better relationship with our children. It's not a night of speaking about why. Many people come over to me and they say, why, Rabbi Wallerstein? What's the main reason that we're having the situation with the children in this dar? What's going on? There's a million different reasons. Sometimes there is no real reason that we can point our finger at. And therefore, I'm not coming here tonight to give you reasons. But like, if someone comes to a doctor with a broken arm and he's screaming in pain, the doctor doesn't start asking, so tell me exactly, how did you break your arm? And explain to me why you broke your arm. The doctor's job is to get that arm set in a cast and relieve the pain of the person. So I'm not here tonight to tell you why the arm is broken. That's not the point of tonight. The point of tonight is to help set that arm and put it in a cast. So there are many subjects. I'm going to just really speak about two subjects. This week's parasha tells us a lot about how to deal with children. Parasha's Vayigash. There's a situation between the Shiftei Kah and Yosef, and they're not getting a good read on what is bothering this king of Egypt. First he says, you're Meraglim. Then he says, you're liars. You didn't bring down your brother. I don't believe the whole story that you're telling me. Then he says, you stole the cup. And Yehuda realized that he's not getting the true story. They went from Meraglim, then he gave them back the money, then he's putting a cup in there. He realized that the derech that's going on here is not working. Zok the Torah says, Vayigash Elov Yehuda, you want to know what's really going on in someone's life? You want to know why that person is giving you problems, like Yosef is giving them problems? The first thing you have to do is Vayigash Elov. The first thing you have to do is get close to that person. To scream and to criticize from afar, you're not going to get the truth. So the Torah tells us, Vayigash Elov Yehuda. And Yehuda approached him. He came close to him. Vayomer bi Adoni yidabena. He's speaking very nicely to him. Yidabena. Where? Avdecha, where? Ba'ozne Adoni. I want to speak into your ear. And kachoya, Yehuda spoke into his ear. And what was the reaction of Yosef HaTzadik? The reaction was to tell Yehuda and the brothers what was really going on. Ani Yosef. It's not about spies, it's not about liars, it's not about cups. It's about Ani Yosef, I am Yosef Ha'oid Avichai. How did Yehuda get Yosef to finally come to say this? By coming close to him, by speaking in his ear. And if we look a little bit further, we see that the same thing happens. Yosef, Vayinashek L'chol Echav. And Yosef went and he kissed all his brothers. He cried on them. The Torah tells us. And after he kissed them and he cried on them, then Dibru Echav Ito, his brothers felt comfortable to talk to him. There are many psukim between Ani Yosef Oed Avichai and to this point where the brothers speak to him. Says Rashi, he kissed them for a long time. Says Rashi, after they realized that he still loved them, that he expressed his emotions to them, and said, I forgive you and I love you, then they felt that they could talk. What a lesson in dealing with other Jews and in dealing with our children. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, the first thing we need to do is to get close to our children. If you're close to a child, then you can speak in his ear. But if you're always speaking from afar, if it's just running through the house on the way to work, and what'd you get on your test, and how you doing, and why'd your Rebbe call me today, and you're gone, then you'll never know what's really wrong. There'll be stories that you'll hear, but you'll never know what's really bothering that child. It has to be Vayigash, and it has to be Ozne. You have to be talking in his ear. And when you're angry, and you're upset, and you have reason to be angry, and you have reason to be upset, Yosef was sold by his own brothers. He suffered by Potiphar. He suffered in jail. He was in Mitzrayim for 22 years. He had a reason to be upset. But if he's going to show his brothers that he's upset, they're not going to talk to him. There's not going to be communications. Says the Pasig, Vayinashik l'chol echov, he kissed all his brothers. Vayevcha lehem, and he cried, V'achar kein dibru echov itoy. Says Rashi, dibru echov itoy, they began to speak to their brother. Why? Shemitchiwa hayaboyshim imenu. Because at first they were embarrassed, and therefore they could not talk to their brother. We're not here to embarrass our children. We're here to make them feel comfortable. We're here to give them a hug and a kiss. Again, I am not giving any criticism. I'm just giving advice. This is preventive medicine. Intervention, once they're off the derech, is so much harder. It takes 10, 15 minutes of a parent's time to prevent. It takes hours and days and years sometimes to intervene. There's a subject that I want to speak about tonight that might make some of us uncomfortable, and that's not what I'm looking to do, but it's a very important subject. The relationship between fathers and daughters and the relationship between mothers and sons. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God has given us two parents, a mother and a father. We're not amoebas, we're human beings, and we have two parents. And there's a reason we have two parents. A boy gets love from his father. It's really unconditional, but it's based on conditions. Why don't you get up for minyan? When I was your age, I got up for minyan. Why aren't you doing better on your tests? When I was at your age, I did better on tests. I never spoke to my parents the way you speak to me. I was a much better ball player. You're not really trying. Because as fathers, we are men, and therefore, it is natural to judge our sons, and we want them to even be better than us. So we could call it conditional love, sort of. Our daughters are perfect. Princesses. They can do nothing wrong. It's unconditional love. I'm a Rebbe 30 years. I'm a Rebbe in a co-ed yeshiva. I have PTA of girls and boys. When a father walks in and I'm talking about his son and I'm like, you know, he's not really doing that well right now. He's not really trying. He's not really learning. The father says, Rabbi Wallstein, you're going to see such a change in 2 weeks. No more going out with the boys to play ball. I'm taking his cell phone away. I'm taking this away. I'm taking that away. For Wallstein, 2 weeks, you're going to see a new boy. Thank you, Yishkoyach. Have a good day. Same kid. Mother shows up for PTA. Hi, how are you, Rabbi Wallstein? Fine. Your son's really not doing well. He's really not trying. He's not plugging away. He's failing all his tests. He's not getting along with anyone in class. Then you get that look from the mother. You know why? Because you don't know how to teach. This whole school doesn't know what they're doing. If it wasn't for my husband, my kid wouldn't be there. Hello, mommy, calm down. And the answer is that the relationship of a mother to her son is an unconditional. He can do no wrong. Vice versa. When I'm teaching a girl and the mother comes to speak to me and I say, she's really not trying, she's really not doing well. Rabbi Wallstein, I know what I got to do. iPod's gone, cell phone's gone, internet's gone, friends are gone. Rabbi Wallstein, in 2 weeks, my daughter's going to be the top of the class. You try to tell some father bad about his daughter at PTA, run for the door. Run for the door. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us two parents. One to give it a little bit over the head, and one to just say, you're the best thing that ever happened in the world. One of the reasons I'm speaking about this, that it's a major problem sometimes in Shalom Bayis between husband and wife. The husband is criticizing his son, and his wife is defending the son. And the husband is getting very upset. Mirla, I don't believe it. You're defending Chaim? over me? What are you doing? And they get into a big machlokes over it. And the kid is in the middle of this machlokes. And if the father understood that naturally it's the mother's place, naturally, sure, she shouldn't do it in front of the child, but it's her natural reaction to defend her son, then he would understand that it's not about him. It's her natural reaction. And vice versa, when she's criticizing her daughter and the father says, your marks weren't so much better than hers, you know? And the wife's going, what? How could you even say that? Because naturally, he defends his daughter. What happens when a father doesn't give unconditional love to his daughter, or a mother doesn't give unconditional love to her son? They seek the unconditional love from somewhere else. This is natural. So the girl seeks this unconditional love from a male, but that's not kahalacha. And some guy comes along and tells her how great she is and how unbelievable she is and how perfect she is, and it doesn't matter what your parents or your teachers or your school or anyone says, because you are the most unbelievable, greatest thing in the world. This is what she is vulnerable, because she is not getting the unconditional male love from her father. And she falls, and she falls very fast. And vice versa, when a boy doesn't get from his mother this unconditional love and he's out, and some girl comes along and says to him, you're the most unbelievable, don't listen to Rosh Hashivas, don't listen to what you get on your own. You're fantastic, you're unbelievable, you're so unbelievable. And he's like, yeah, I even get up for davening for you. Then all of a sudden, there's a relationship that's keneged halacha, keneged Judaism, and that's where it starts. Does that mean that every father that gives unconditional love to his daughter is not going to go off? No, there's no 100%. What I'm saying tonight is I'm just giving advice. Does it work 100% all the time? Nothing does. Davening to Hashem works 100% all the time. But we have to do what we can, kederach, that we know. And therefore, a father that has a very good relationship with his daughter, she will come to him. When she has problems and she needs to talk something, she will come to him. She will not seek this unconditional male love from the wrong places. It's a defense that we need to build, and vice versa. We're brought up that Tati takes care of the boys and Mommy takes care of the girls. So when the husband doesn't talk to his daughters because Mommy's taking care. And it's wrong. In the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch, it says that the Arizal, every Friday night, kissed his mother's hand. There was a relationship between the Arizal and his mother for as long as she lived. Every Friday night he kissed his mother's hand. I saw a perush on it, because he felt that the man benches the children Friday night and the mother sits there, she worked the whole week, she dressed them, she fed them, and he gets to bench them and she doesn't. So as a karas ha'toif to the mother, the whole family, and the svadim, I know they do that, they line up and they kiss the mother's hand. There has to be a relationship. I'm not talking outside the Torah. These are not my ideas. The Torah says, Rivka, or Heves, Yaakov. The Torah says that Rivka loved Yaakov. Why does the Torah have to tell us that his mother loved him? The Torah tells us that the mother showed, in fact, the Medrash Rabbah says, that she used to listen to him learn. And the more he learned, the more she loved him. It's a Farish of Medrash Rabbah. How many mothers spend time listening to their sons learn? And say, wow, that's unbelievable. You're a Talmid Chacham. Magen Avraham brings down that a woman is supposed to stand by Hadlakas Neiros and daven that her children, her sons, should be light up the world like the candles light up the house. There's a relationship between a mother and a son. It's very, very important. And therefore, this week's Parsha Vayigash, Elov Yehuda, we need to come close to our children if we want to talk to them. And to come close to your children, you need to give them time. Give them time now. For if they go off the derech, you're going to give them a lot more time. That's my first subject. My second subject is self-confidence and effort. We just passed the Yontif of Hanukkah. The Greek culture. What is the Greek culture? The Greek culture is the Olympics. They created the Olympics. Competition with one winner. Competition, competition, but there's only one gold medalist. That is Keneged the Torah. The Torah teaches us that it's the amelus, that it's the effort that a person puts in, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges you for. There's a Mishnah, Pirkei Avos, totally anti-Greek culture. Rav Tarfon, Mishnah Chaf Aleph, Hu HaYoyme, he said, Lo Alecha Hamlacha Ligmar. It's not about winning the race. You don't even have to finish the race. Lo alecha hamalacha ligmar. Lo ato ben chayrim li batal mimena. So you got to try. You got to do your best. You can only win if you have the siyata d'shmaya. That's not what it's about. It's about trying. The Greek culture tells us it's not about trying. It's about winning. That's the world we live in today. It's about winning. In sports, it's about winning. Every sport has a championship. In beauty, Miss America, it's about winning. In knowledge, it's about getting the best mark. Everything is about winning. Nothing about effort. In the chinuch world, which I am part of, it's not about effort. Nobody got the valedictorian of yeshiva because they tried the hardest. The valedictorian is the one that got 105 on their test. What about the kids who are trying and killing themselves? Yes, you're all right. I wasn't valedictorian. But that's not a chip on my shoulder. That's not why I'm saying it. I skipped eighth grade. I'm still trying to make it up. It's a world about winning. This yeshiva has 40 blot, then this yeshiva needs 60 blot. This yeshiva has 4 hours of homework, this yeshiva needs 8 hours of homework. The kid next door, what's the first question we ask our kid when they come home with a test? What did she get? What did that one get? What did that one get? What do you care? Oh, it's competition. So the Greeks, their whole thing, their whole culture was based on winning. And that's the gullus that we're in today. Gambling by Jews? When did that start? When did gambling by Jews start? The gambling problem? What's the basis of gambling? The basis of gambling is that I'm willing to spend any amount of money so that I could be a winner. I can work a whole week and make $1,000 and go in 20 minutes and lose it? Why? Because it's worth it for me to try with those $1,000 to sit there and say, I am a winner. The whole world of gambling and casinos and poker and all the garbage that we live amongst is all based on Greek culture. I need to be a winner. You don't win from effort. And this is what we're teaching our children. Nobody gets rewarded for effort. Just the opposite. You try, and then they write on the back of your report card, ooh, I see potential. But they're not living up to it. And you get smacked on the head for that. Effort doesn't get rewarded. And that's Greek culture. And Al-Hanisim, I don't have time tonight to speak about it. Al-Hanisim that we say in Shemona Esrei doesn't say anything about the miracle of the menorah. It says about the miracle of the war, and then we came into the Beis HaMikdash, and we cleaned it out, and we made it tahar, and we lit the menorah. What happened? Till the oil lasted for 8 days? Chachamim, you're writing it, I'm saying in Al-Hanisim, why are you hiding it? Why are you hiding this? Why don't you write in Al-Hanisim that it lasted for 8 days? And the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is proud of us. The reason we put the menorah in the window is because we looked for a pach shemen. For effort. He took care that it lasted for 8 days. That's not the nes. Hashem wants the world to see. Klai Yisrael tumu hutra b'tzibur. Klai Yisrael could have lit any can that they wanted. They said, no, we're going to find the can that's pure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards effort. This world, for some reason, has come to a place where it doesn't reward effort. I'll just tell you a short story. Somebody sent it to me on the internet. They sent me, actually to my secretary, a short clip. No, you would take a clip. It shows the Olympics, I think it was 8 years ago, and there was an American runner in the relay race, and she tripped, and she fell, and she broke her shoulder. And there she is laying on the floor, and the other racers just ran right by her. And they came out, the medics, and they pulled her off. Mama, she just pulled her off so that she wouldn't be in the way. They wouldn't trip over her. And they worked her on the side. And all of a sudden, the film it fades out. And it goes to the Special Olympics. Special Olympics, Down syndrome children, autistic children. That's the Special Olympics that they have once a year. And it fades out to the Special Olympics. And you see these 10 Down syndrome children. They have to run, I don't know, 100 feet. And they all line up, and they're all excited, and they start running. And this one kid trips, and he falls. And they're all a little bit ahead of him, and they all turn around. They have this on film. They all turn around. They go back to him. They stand around him, and they pick him up. And the caption says, "So who are the real champions?" When I saw that, that's the difference between Jewish culture and Greek culture. Greek culture is run right over him. Run right by him. You got to get the gold. Jewish culture is somebody fell. Let's go back and help that person. Parents, educators, there's no competition in the Torah. It doesn't exist. There's no, my tefillin's bigger than his tefillin. My tefillin's are made out of gold threads. There's no competition. Look through the Torah. I did my research. There was one competition in the Torah. And the Gemara says the Kehanim, to do Trumas HaDeshen, they had to choose which coin we get up there. So they made a race. Let's run up the Kevesh and see who gets there first. He does the Trumas HaDeshen. What does the Gemara say? So two Kohanim were running, competition, Greek culture. So he pushed them off. And he broke his leg, and he had a mum, and he couldn't do avoid in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Chacham said, competition in Yiddishkeit doesn't work. We'll do a pious, we'll do a lottery. Competitions doesn't work. Tell you ridiculous people, we don't have competition. It's not about what you got on your test. It's about how hard you tried. And that's what we need to do with our children. It's effort, it's effort. I just want to tell you very short a story that happened to me in Yeshiva Crown Heights. There was a fourth grader, I'm also assistant principal. There was a fourth grader, the kids hated this kid. Nobody looked at him, nobody gave him snacks, nobody played with him. And on top of all that, he was failing every single test. 20, 25, 30, it wasn't happening, it wasn't working. And they were thinking of letting him go, maybe a better yeshiva, different yeshiva, he'll make new friends. I said, you know what, give me a chance, let me just try something with him. So, I took him by lunch, and I went over to him. I knew what they were learning, and I told him a Dvar Torah with a gematria. Okay, told him a Torah, and that was it. He went back to class. 2 days later, I came back to the class, and I said, I have a question to ask the class. Whoever gets it right, you get a whole week, 15 minutes extra recess. Now, you have to understand, in fourth grade, you could say I'm bringing you $30 billion, or I'm giving you 15 minutes recess. They're taking the 15 minutes recess. So, to them, this was like major. So I come into the class, I say, I have a question. Anyone who knows this question, the whole class is going to get 15 minutes for the rest of the week. And they're all sitting there. And I ask this question. Of course, they never learned it, so they didn't know the answer. And this kid's like, ooh, 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 ooh. And they're all looking at him like, come on. And he says, he didn't realize I set this up. And he says, I know the answer. It's a gematria. This equals this. And I'm like, what? This is not even a fourth. This is like a ninth grade question. That is awesome. And then they hopped that they're getting extra recess, and they all jumped on him, mamash like a pile. And they were hugging him and kissing him. He's the man. He got us a whole week extra recess. He's the man. He didn't realize that I set this whole thing up. He graduated a long time ago. From that point on, besides having friends, his marks went from 40 to 60. By the time he got to my class in eighth grade, he was a good, solid 80 student. What happened? What happened? What changed? He did something. He knew something. He realized that if he tries, hey, maybe I could get good marks. That's what we need to give our children. We need to focus on what they do right. Now, I know there's some parents in here that are going to really, I don't know how much time, I have like 5 minutes left, 3 minutes left? Okay, 5 minutes left. So let me just tell you very fast. I don't know how many parents are going to listen to what I'm about to tell you, but I'm telling you that it works. Kid comes home from school, has a 50. Has a 50 on his test. So, first thing, 50? You know how much I'm paying for tuition? You know how hard we're working? Your father's doing 3 jobs. 50 and a tutor? I can't believe this. At that point, this child turns it off. Whatever you have to say to this child the rest of the night, that child will not hear you. Now let's go out of the box for a minute. Shefula, what did you get? A 50? Come here, sit down. You got half the test right. Let's look at what you got right and what you got wrong. Number three, you got right. That's 10, there's an A, B, C, D, E, F, G on that. You got that right. And number four, if you would have just thought, number four is part of, this kid's like, what? My mother's talking to me with a 50? And if you're going to focus on what they got right, the ears are wide open. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. They're wide open. What do you have to say? And mommy, you're right. I didn't study. And if I got that one right, I should have gotten that one right. And next test is a 60. And next test is a 70. And next test is an 80. I know it sounds totally out of the box. And it's not the way most of us were brought up. But it works. You have to focus on the good. On the good. And if you focus on the good, then you could speak in the end. Then if there's something bothering the kid, she'll tell you, he'll tell you. So I want to end off with a bracha from a Gemara in Erevin. A lot of you know this Gemara. Rav Preda Havalehu Talmida. There was Rav Preda who had a Talmud who he used to repeat each lesson 400 times. 400 times he had to learn it over with him. He definitely had a learning disability to learn a piece of Gemara over 400 times. But he learned with him 400 times. One day, the Gemara says, they came to him, to Rav Preda, and they asked him to go out and do a mitzvah. He learned with the boy 400 times. At the end, the boy did not know one word he was talking about. So Rav Preda asked him, I don't understand. I learned with you 400 times. You always know it after 400 times. How come this time you don't know it after 400 times? Listen to what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that the little boy, or the young man said, my attention was diverted. Every moment I was worried that my master would get up and leave because I knew that he had to go to a wedding or to a bar mitzvah. And therefore I could not focus. Because I was always worried that you would leave and you wouldn't finish the 400 times and therefore I wouldn't know. So why should I listen now? So Rav Preda should have said, okay, that's your fault. I taught it to you the 400 times. Have a good day. No. Says the Gemara, Rav Preda learned with him another 400 times. 800 times, one piece of Gemara. 800 times. You know what that means? You know how much time that is? 800 times. And after he learned with him the second 400 times, he got it. Listen carefully. And this is my bracha to everyone. Nafka bas kola. A heavenly voice came out of Shemayim and asked the Rebbe, Rabbi Preda, Nichalech, the Lesifulach Arbe Meishnei, do you want me to give you 400 years as a reward for what you did for this child? Or do you want me to give your generation the schutz, the merit, to go to Olam Haba? Amar, Rav Preda replied, "The Nisku Anav V'Dari La'Amal De'Asei. I want me and my generation to go to the next world, to Olam Haba." Amar Lehem Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Rabbi Preda, "Tenu Loi." Actually, he said to the Malachim, "Tenu Loi Zuv V'Zu." Give him the 400 years, and take him and his generation to the next world, a generation where mechanchim and parents have patience to teach 400 times. And then if the child doesn't get it, to ask the question, why not? Why didn't you get it? Because Rebbe, I was scared. Because Mom, I didn't think you'd be here tomorrow. I knew you were going away. Because Dad, I was nervous. Yesterday you said there's something wrong in the business and I was scared that we wouldn't be able to pay our rent and we wouldn't have a house anymore. You should hear the perception, the things that children think about when they hear things in the house. And the perception of a child is his reality. But a person who after 400 times and $400 or $4,000 is not finished and continues to teach their child, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you, the Machanchim, and the whole generation, if that's how you teach my children, for every Jewish child is God's child, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will pay you back with long life and Olam Haba, and that we'll all be zeicha that this dar that's going through so much But we may not be accomplishing as much as the other Dairis, but the effort is better than bigger than ever before. And in a world, in a culture, in a Yiddishkeit world where effort is what counts, that is what's going to bring Mashiach, b'mehera b'yameinu, amen.